If you're a regular listener of Portable Practical Pediatrics, you've heard me say things like, from mommy all the way to matriculation. If it involves children, we talk about it here. Well, that's my way of saying that I take on a variety of topics in this blog. And today's no exception. In today's PEDcast, I'm going to broaden your understanding of strep infections in children by telling you a story that happened in my family almost 100 years ago. So stay tuned for a very interesting and historical edition of Portable Practical Pediatrics.
It's Paul Smolin, MD, your PEDcast host, bringing you informative and entertaining knowledge on a wide range of parenting and child health topics. You have parenting questions. He has answers. It's Portable Practical Pediatrics on your schedule. And here is your PEDcast host, Dr. Paul Smolin.
Imagine you are a six-year-old child and you have a five-year-old little sister. The year's 1929, and your younger sister just came down with a sore throat, a fever, and now she's developing a rash. Your parents seem worried, very worried, and take her to the doctor who diagnoses your sister with scarlet fever, a relatively common form of strep throat that still exists today. Well, since this is 1929, there is no penicillin, no clindamycin, or any other medication for that matter that can treat this infection. And your parents and sister's doctor know that fact. Your sister's doctor makes some suggestions to help your dear little sister get better. But in reality, her own immune system is all the healing power that she has available. Your parents and her doctor know she has about a 20% chance of dying from her infection. Your sister's doctor recommends to your parents that they treat her by leaving your sister's window open to let in fresh air, that they lower her body temperature with alcohol baths since her fever was thought to be the actual disease, and that they start placing a mustard plaster on her neck to draw the illness from her throat. And finally, that they make sure that your sister wears an undershirt to keep warm. That was a big issue in 1929 healthcare, whether you wear an undershirt or not. Well, of course, your sister was put in quarantine by the health department. You're sent away to stay with relatives, banned from your own home and contact with your sick sister. Even in 1929, doctors understood that scarlet fever was very contagious and often lethal. Well, very sadly, the worst happens. Despite your parents faithfully following all the doctor's orders and giving your sister all the loving care and attention that they could, your sister dies 2 days later. Your sister's now gone forever at the tender age of 5 years of age, and you are now an only child. Your parents are devastated and really never recover from the experience of their child's death, especially your mother. Well, this is a true story, and that six-year-old child was my mother, who is now 93 years old. Those events actually happened in her family in 1929, and she still gets emotional to this day when she talks about her little sister. The strep germ has plagued children for centuries. Just listen to some of the terminology that developed to describe strep infections. Scarlatina, erysipelas, impetigo, rheumatic fever, tonsillopharyngitis, omphalitis, and cellulitis. Sounds like you're reading words right out of a Dickens novel, doesn't it? All this terminology was developed because strep infections have been devastating children for centuries, probably millennia. Well, fortunately, a myriad of microbiologists, physicians, and other scientists in the 20th century developed potent ways to stop the serious damaging effects of strep and convert it to a mostly nuisance illness of childhood that it is today. But parents of young children still need to be knowledgeable about this potentially serious infection. So in today's podcast, I'm going to give my listeners some background about the biology and potential complications of Group A beta hemolytic strep infections, also known as strep throat in children. Well, what is strep and why does it mainly affect children? Well, strep is actually a genus of round bacteria, also known as cocci, that are capable of causing a lot of misery for both humans and animals. If you're listening to this podcast, take a minute to look at the transcript of this post at my blog, www.doxmo.com, and you'll see a partial list of some of the strep species that are capable of causing disease. The strep that we are focusing on today and the strep that gets top bill with most parents is strep pyogenes. It's the one that causes strep throat and scarlet fever, among other diseases. It gets the name pyogenes because it's usually pus-forming when it gets into a child's body. So why do children get most of the disease that is caused by strep pyogenes? Why is it that parents are rarely ill with strep when their children come to the doctor with strep? Something that's definitely not true when their children have the flu or a diarrhea illness. Well, the answer is simple. Parents have been there and done that when they were children. Parents have developed resistance to many strep infections from having these illnesses when they were young. Their children, however, they're encountering these germs often for the first time. For the children, no experience plus lots of exposure means sickness has arrived. You're probably wondering if Group A beta hemolytic strep causes plain strep throat and scarlet fever. How are plain strep throat and scarlet fever different? Well, they're not different except in the fact that with scarlet fever strains, the strep germ has developed the ability to produce a skin toxin. That's a protein that can damage the child's skin at the same time it infects the child's throat. These strep germs are referred to as scarlet strains, like the one that killed my aunt in 1929. It turns out that scarlet strains tend to be more virulent than the non-scarlet strains, as my family discovered. But Doxmo, before there was penicillin, what happened to children with strep infections? Well, that's a good question. Most of them, fortunately, simply recovered from their strep infection. Gradually, after many of these infections during their childhood, they became less and less prone to coming down with strep throat, including the ones that cause scarlet fever. Their immune systems just learned to fight it off, even before it got started. But strep posed another real danger for children in 1929 before penicillin. It sometimes had another trick up its sleeve. The strep germ had the ability to provoke such a strong immune reaction in an infected young child that even after the germ was gone for a week or two, the infected child's immune system would go crazy and start attacking various parts of the child's body. This after strep immune reaction was known as rheumatic fever, since joint swelling, that's the rheumatic part, was such a strong part of the reaction. The child seemed to have recovered from the strep infection, but now their joints swelled terribly, their heart enlarged, fever returned, and other bizarre things started happening to the child. Rheumatic fever could permanently damage a child's heart, crippling them for the rest of their life. This germ is horrible. No wonder grandparents still get a fearful look to this day when a pediatrician tells them that their grandchild has scarlet fever or strep throat. Fear of strep is visceral for them because they understand how dangerous the germ used to be. Okay, now we've talked a little about strep infections in children, it's time to put your knowledge to the test. I'm going to ask you a series of questions related to strep infections, and I want you to make your best guess as to the answer. Here we go. Question number one. A child's tonsils are the only part of their bodies that strep can infect. Answer to that, no. Skin infections, sinus infections, pneumonia, lots of places strep can land and make people sick. Number two, doctors can tell who has strep throat by looking in a child's throat. Nope. We need a throat culture to know who has strep. Number three, unless a strep throat is treated, it will not go away. That's not true either. Your child's immune system is their best aid at getting rid of a strep infection. Number four, once a child has had strep throat, they can't get it again. Well, strep's not just one thing. It's constantly changing. So kids get strep throat multiple times. And as they become adults, they become more and more resistant to strep infections. Question number five. The peak ages children get strep throat are between 4 and 8 years of age. Definitely. Number six, scarlet fever is a different form of strep throat. Yes, they're both strep infections. One has a rash, one doesn't. Other than that, they're the same thing. Number seven, group A strep can provoke serious immune reactions that can injure a child's heart or kidneys or brain. Definitely true. Remember that rheumatic fever thing we talked about where joints and heart and all sorts of strange things happen to kids after a strep infection? Number eight, removing a child's tonsils reduces their chance of getting strep throat. Well, this turns out to be true. Strep first sticks to tonsils, and if there's no tonsils, it's really hard for it to land in a child's throat. And the final question, good hand washing or hand sanitizer use is a child's best way of avoiding a strep infection. True. Well, I hope that little exercise has broadened your knowledge about strep infections. Speaking of strep, have you ever read the story of the Velveteen Rabbit to your children? It's a classic children's book written in 1922 by Marjorie Williams. The book is actually partly about strep throat and scarlet fever. I recommend that you get this book out and read it again now that you have more knowledge about scarlet fever and strep. And of course, read it to your children. They'll enjoy the story and the time that they get to spend with you. As always, thanks for joining me today. If you enjoy learning about child health with PEDcast, please take a minute to write a review on iTunes, subscribe to my blog at www.docsmoke.com, or share an episode with a friend or family. And of course, write me with your comments and insights. I will share them with my many, many listeners. Well, this is Dr. Paul Smolin, hoping when it comes to strep throat, we can soon say that's all she wrote. Until next time. I would like to thank the following people for their assistance in the production of this podcast. Dr. David Jaffe, the voice of the introduction. Robert Beezer, the composer-arranger of the intro music. Ann Gesner, my wonderful content editor. Benjamin Smolin and Jerome Moof, the talented musicians who produced this delightful theme music. Sarah Smolin and Nathaniel Horlick for their digital wizardry. And Wendy Smolin Esquire and Seth, the Rocket Man Barrister Jaffe, for their inspirational guidance. Thanks, guys.
By listening to this PEDcast, you agree to all of the terms and conditions found at the DocSmo.com website. This DocSmo.com PEDcast is informational only. Dr. Smolin does not diagnose, treat, or offer specific medical advice for your child. For specific medical advice regarding your child, consult his or her healthcare provider.